carefully, or it can change your life. One night I said it to my girl, now my girl's my wife. Oh, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. High on a hill was a lonely goat herd. Loud was the voice of the lonely goat herd. Folks in a town that was quite remote heard. Lusty and clear from the goat herd's throat herd. Now, oh, oh, Lady Odalee, oh. Lady Odalay, oh, oh, Lady Odalee, oh, Lady Odalee, oh, lay. A prince on the bridge of a castle moat heard. And on a road with a load to tote heard. Ooh, all of the men in the midst of a table daughter. Sit loose over.
And so we say goodbye to the Big Band Music Show. Thank you, Andy Paul, for another great show today of Big Band Music on WHFR Dearborn, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And now, 1 o'clock, it is time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. It is our chance to tell you what we've heard and what we know about local news that matters to all of us. And there are some national issues that matter to us. And we're going to be talking about a couple of those because they matter pretty directly. But in addition, we're going to have stories about Dearborn and the surrounding area. Hi, my name is Jay Koronik, and with me today is co-host Susan Morrell. How are you doing, Susan?
Very good. We have some beautiful weather here in Michigan, which we've been having finally some nice summer weather the last few weeks, because we've had kind of a cool summer, but it's warmed up, beautiful, around 80 degrees, and the sun is shining. So wish you were here, right?
Well, get out there. Yes, if you're listening online to find out about Dearborn from California or Germany or Japan, it is beautiful here, but we can't guarantee how long it might last, because Michigan, they say wait 15 minutes and it'll be different. It has been beautiful since yesterday about 5 o'clock or so, when the rain stopped.
Right.
So we're enjoying that as best we can here at Henry Ford Community College. Let me start by giving the update about our new fall semester. You know, folks, you've been hearing our registration pre-recorded announcement for last week or so. Things are booming here, and the semester starts next week Thursday. That's right, 6 days from now. The big time fall, as they call it, the regular semester, is going to begin here. And success has its problems. We have 27% increase in enrollment. And we were kind of busting at the seams last fall. So we have new buildings and new classroom space that we've identified. There's things still that need to get in place. So stuff is a little, will be a little tough here when everybody shows up next Thursday as classes begin for those classes that meet on Thursday. Also today, Friday, just so you know, all the offices are open. The 4-day work week for spring and summer here at the college, to save on energy and money, of course, is now over. So if you do want to come over and register for classes, or even just get admitted to start with, you can do that today, because offices will be open at least till 4:30. And I think they're going to have Saturday hours tomorrow. That's my understanding in the in the registration areas and in the admissions areas of Henry Ford Community College. They usually do the Saturday before classes start, and even the Saturday after they start, too. So tomorrow, August 22nd, I know they're going to have the offices open at least in the morning hours, but you can come by today until 4:30 at least and enroll. Obviously, more information about the fall semester, the exact start schedule, the classes that are offered that are still available, that's all available online from from hfcc.edu. So www.hfcc.edu for more information about that. Parking. We've been talking on this show about the parking on campus. It's a $20 million project, which we've been saving up our pennies for, and had a couple setbacks because they discovered some wildlife areas that had to be preserved, and the cost went up from $6 million to $20 million. But it's your tax dollars at work, finally. Most of our south lots are going to be open again. Again, we have lots all around the campus, north and south, here at 5101 Evergreen, just south of Ford Road in West Dearborn. West is like south, is west of Southville Expressway. So we are going to do the best we can next week as a college to get everybody a parking place. We actually have about 150 more parking spots than we did last fall, but there's a 27% increase in enrollment. That's full and part-time. So that means we'll be pretty crowded here, especially the first couple days until people either drop out or change their schedules or decide when to arrive on campus to get a spot. Some people get here early to get a parking spot that's close to the building, for example. So until those things settle out, it's going to be pretty crazy here. Now, the other two south lots will be open, they say, October 15th. But there is still construction going on of the parking lots, and they're working like crazy. I think they're going to work through the weekend, and every extra hour, I know the rain yesterday set them back one day. In terms of these big earth movers, they can't go through mud holes in order to dig up what they need to do, and the asphalt people can't work in the rain, apparently, when they cover, you know, the gravel or the ground, whatever, with the surface toppings. So I don't have a good suggestion except carpooling. If you know someone else coming to the college, and almost everybody is, then ride in with them, okay, so that there's one extra car. If we can cut the cars coming here in 50%, in other words, two people instead of one person sharing a car, we're going to have places for everybody, you know, right up front, perhaps. Other than that, if you're in West Dearborn, the bicycle path is possible to come up to our perimeter drive, even though the perimeter drive around our campus, by definition, that's what a perimeter drive is, around the outside of the campus, is actually closed for a part of those southwest lots that I mentioned that will be closed until October 15th. So you might have to walk your bike from the bike path across a little bit of grass and into the campus from the west side. So
I have to say the parking lot looks a lot better this week than it looked last week. So yep. When do you expect it will finally be finished?
Well, they have to resurface all the north lots, but that'll happen next spring, next summer is the other half. So we have the north lots are all there. They've been there. They're just not in real good shape, you know. They need
No, but when will they all be opened up for use, for student use?
October 15th, and actually there'll be extra spaces, you know, they say about when they open the two southwest lots that are still under construction right now, there'll be about another, I think, 800 to 1,000 parking spots, but that's not until October 15th. That's about halfway through the fall semester. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so things are going to be a little packed here with 27% increase in bodies, and we're just suggesting you plan ahead. It's a great college. It's a great place to be, and we've got the classes, and we've got the parking lots, but it's going to be crowded the first couple days. It always is. It always is, and some lots and that perimeter drive is going to be closed for a couple months because they're still working on two of the lots, and that's the way that goes. But we actually have about 150 more parking spots for cars than we did last fall at this point, even with the two lots out of circulation. So we have a north entrance drive and a south entrance drive, and the south entrance drive, was closed today, in fact, because good old state of Michigan, this is called MDOT, Michigan Department of Transportation, they were called 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, to get here and point the traffic lights for the south entrance and exit of our campus in the right places, because we moved the entrances. We've made them bigger. And they haven't done that.
And it's very, very confusing.
It's almost 3 weeks, and they haven't done it.
It's very confusing.
They cannot open that south lane, those lanes in and out of the main entrance on the south part of the college without the traffic lights working. It's like illegal or just not safe.
Well, there's going to be massive traffic jams.
Well, right now, the only way to get to the south drive to the one or two lots that are going to be available next Thursday is over a sort of a bumpy gravel road, and a lot of people are going to be unhappy about that, especially if it rains. That'll be a bumpy gravel mud pit, and and that's unfortunate, but that's what I drive to get here. I park at the south lot to keep out of the way of the other students so far, but it's they've got to open the drive. But I'm just saying, for those that think it's the college's fault here, we've had that entranceway done for 2.5 weeks now, and the MDOT had it, you know, had the report. And
well, when do we expect them?
They haven't said. Whenever they can get here.
Yeah. Well,
this is the state of Michigan, which has many extra days off because they can't afford to pay them, and I don't know if that affects MDOT or not, but we're going to be horribly inconvenienced by the state of Michigan, because the contractors, they have that south entrance ready to open. They have this for three weeks.
Is what happens when government is not functioning optimally.
but you know, like some people complain, they say, I've heard this crazy statement, you can drive for 100 miles on a freeway and still not see anything that government has done good for you.
Well, I don't agree with that.
No, because the freeway, this is the joke, the freeway was paid for by government money. You know?
Right, hello. Knock, knock.
All of our freeways are paid
for. It's like a knock-knock joke.
By the government.
Jay, not to change the subject, but let me ask you this. What would you attribute the huge increase in the number of students coming back to college? What is that reason for that?
We have the lowest, or almost the lowest, maybe we're only second lowest, but we have almost the lowest, if not the lowest, tuition rate per class. So a lot of people that can't afford to go to four-year school out of high school, or coming back to school and just need a two-year, need a class in the first 2 years, this is the place to come if you want to save money. And, of course, our reputation, the quality of our programs, the transferability rate is extremely high of everything that's identified as transferable to the students. And so we're a great deal, great bargain.
Do you think there's a lot of students returning to school because of the No Worker Left Behind program?
Yes. And there are several programs to help people, get back to school. No Worker Left Behind, but also a couple of others that I can't remember the names of right now that are in place. So, if you need more education to complete a degree, if you need a new direction, we have something like 70 or 80 certificate programs that are directed towards vocational programs that might take a year or two to finish, but, well, here we are. So we're, success has its downside, and that is all the people that are coming here, but we have increased the number of faculty, increased the number of classes, classrooms, more online instruction, still some online, although most of the online classes are closed now, I understand, because of the convenience factor. If you can do a college class in your pajamas, most people would prefer that, I guess. It's not easy, folks. If you're signed up for those online classes, oh my gosh, you better be on your computer and doing the reading and the other assignments on almost a daily basis, or you're gonna bomb out of that quick. So online classes are not easy. Even if you are in your pajamas, you're still going to be working hard.
I find that staying in my pajamas happens to be very unproductive. I don't get much accomplished when I'm in
true.
My pajamas.
If I try to read a book while I'm laying in bed, I fall asleep.
Right. There's an incentive there.
Just too tempting, even if it's a great book. So you've got to be upright and motivated in order to succeed in an online class. So there we go. Now, I know that you would like to make maybe some brief comments about cash for clunkers, which we should let people know in this area. If they've got a clunker, if they've got a car that's old enough that gets bad gas economy, I mean really bad, then you can get several thousand dollars of incentive money From the government, actually from the dealer, and the government pays back the dealer, but only through Monday night. I bet some dealers are going to be swamped on Monday evening when many are open until 9, you know, on
sure.
Mondays. But be aware of that. The government added, you know, $2 billion to the program. Thank you, legislators that voted for that. And it looks like, except for a few Republican naysayers, this is a stimulus plan out of all the stimulus plans that has been in place and really working. I mean, some of the dealerships, I know I talked to a dealer in Traverse City accidentally who had locked himself out of his Corvette and had to call his dealership in Grand Rapids to come with another set of keys. That's a real smart dealer. I mean, he takes a Corvette for the weekend on his little trip with his girlfriend. Oh, seriously, I guess she was his girlfriend. I'm sorry, I won't mention the name. But and then he locks himself out of his car, and he's trapped there at an exclusive restaurant charging high-priced bottles of wine for everybody. Anyway, so he was complaining, oh, the government hasn't paid us yet. You know, well, the money is there. It's coming, fellow. He said something like $300,000 in his dealership that he was owed by the government in the first bailout. Well, the first bailout was only... you know, it was only $1 billion, and you think of all the car dealerships in the U.S., but they've put extra people in the transportation secretary's office to process those. Some dealers, they haven't gone through the paperwork. Apparently, there's a couple of pages they have to fill out, and they have to send it in via, you know, electronic means, email, in order to do this application. And so some of them have done it wrong or have just not sent it in. But it seems to me if he can take a Corvette on the weekend and pay for this expensive restaurant and the free bottles of wine and have his service department drive up from Grand Rapids to Traverse City, that he was doing well enough, he shouldn't be complaining. I mean, he probably had an extra $300,000 in his own bank account.
Well, this is true. So, this is true.
But anybody will complain about anything. So the $2 billion is already gone, though. It was approved, and it's already spent, folks. So they had to cut this off. It can't go on forever. I mean, what did you think? Stimulus is just that. It's to get things rolling, to get people thinking that maybe it's not a bad time to buy a car, even though you have to put out a lot of money. I do want to say is that one of our colleagues here at the station had a 1994 Ford car. It was a Focus, and it didn't really qualify. She went to Ford dealers locally. It's not a clunker, even though, what is this? It's 15 years old.
Well, it has
because to meet, it still gets good gas mileage.
It has to meet certain qualifications. Right. But, you know, I do have to take issue when you say it's a program that really worked. Well, it depends on how you look at it, your perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And, okay, so you're talking about $3 billion. Mm-hmm. That's how many zeros? But anyway, there are only 457,000 vehicles that were serviced, or in other words, purchased through this program. So if you do the math, $3 billion divided by 457,000 vehicles, you get 6,500 taxpayer dollars for each vehicle. That means my taxpayer dollars, your taxpayer dollars, our taxpayer, I'd love to have somebody give me $6,500 for a new vehicle. I'd like to have a new car too. Now, why are we? No, I mean, really, why are we as taxpayers going to help Howard Dean and Bill Frist buy new cars? Hello.
By the way, Howard Dean drives a 27-year-old car.
No, he just made the... And that's the car he just turned in. He made that announcement.
Yeah, well.
And Bill Frist also did, too. And guess what? We're already paying them a good salary with taxpayer dollars.
Well, Howard doesn't work for the government anymore.
No, but I mean, they're basically politicians.
Yep.
Career politicians.
Well, he's not in a political job yet, but let's not worry about Howard Dean. I have a great book.
But I mean, do they need us to help them buy a car? That is my question.
Well, and I know I saw Hannity last night. Somebody got money for trading in an old Ford Explorer, and he bought a Toyota car, a Corolla. And so how is this helping America? Well, okay, I don't know. Is the Corolla made in the U.S.? I think it's made in California.
Well, part of it, part of it is
but
made.
But the point is, if you look at the economic impact of the Clunkers program, you can't deny that a lot of people who work at a dealership, who work at, I don't know, the banks that give the loans because people still have to buy the car, that there's many, many more people who are in their jobs right now rather than being fired or laid off because of this program. So the economic consequences are immediate, and they do trickle down, if you want to call it. They do expand out from that. So I think most economists would say, this was a stimulus program. Can't go on forever. Government couldn't do it forever. That does help get people into, let's say, the car buying mood, because people were a little afraid of buying a new car, you know, the cost. And apparently with a couple $1,000 incentive, they think they can afford to pay the
buy
payments
a new car.
Now. They
buy
think
a new
they
car.
Can afford to do it, even with insurance rates and gasoline prices. I think some of them are being misled. To tell you the truth, sure, it's good to get rid of a clunker, but maybe you're not even driving that much. And as long as it works enough, maybe you don't really need a new car, even though we all love new cars. At least we've been conditioned to be that way. So it is, does any stimulus really work? Yes, some of them really do. And in this case, it looks like this really has some positive
implications. No, it did, and I agree with that. But also, my other criticism is a lot of these clunkers were still good vehicles. Guess what? They were still really good cars, and now the government is going to supposedly destroy them. Mm-hmm. Those cars could have been donated through some of these charity programs to people who needed a car, who don't have a car, and if they had a car, they would have a job. That would be a much better use for these clunkers than to supposedly destroy them. But I hear they're actually going out the back door of the dealerships, and there's all kinds of deals out the back door.
Yeah, they, as I explained on this show a couple weeks ago, too, they had to put things in place like that so that the same car doesn't cycle in and cycle back out and get the clunker credit over and over again. The same car. That
but why
be
couldn't
fair.
They have been donated to people who need jobs, who need a car? We have to ride the bus. There's no buses. I mean,
right. I need to tell people who are thinking of doing this, you might want to consider, a donation of the car. In fact, WDET still has the Car Talk Boys associated with a program where you can get a fairly sizable tax credit if you donate the car to WDET Radio. Okay, through the Car Talk program that they sponsor. And that'll be a couple $1,000s, too. It's true that this cash for clunkers, the money comes up front from the dealer. I mean, the dealer gets reimbursed, so you don't have to wait for a tax rebate, or you don't have to wait for a check in the mail. But there are ways to make use of your car as a donation, too, your older car that would help people that do need a car if they can afford the gasoline, the maintenance, and the insurance.
So, Jay, in your final analysis, are you saying that you're supportive of the program? You think it was a good use of our tax dollars?
Considering that for the sake of the city of Detroit and the auto industry that is here, considering that people were very leery and afraid to consider buying a new car, we had to have something to get them going again. Whether or not they were made a good decision about buying that car, whether or not those cars could have gone to some other purpose, I don't know. But I think it does get the economy rolling to a little extent, and certainly it does help Detroit and Detroit industry and Detroit dealers, as well as car dealers around the country, whether they're selling Japanese cars or American cars, it does help the economy a little bit. We've got a long way to go to get out of the economic downturn, although apparently some Wall Street bankers are doing pretty well again, multi-million dollar salaries reinstated and so on. I won't go into that. But the other local issue that is a national issue, and we can't add too much to it except try to give you some other sources, is healthcare reform. One thing I found out this morning, although I didn't see it, is that Rolling Stone magazine, it's not just about music, folks, their current issue has a major cover story in Rolling Stone call on healthcare reform. Its subtitle is Sick and Wrong, Healthcare Reform. And it is a story by the editor Matt Taibbi. And he says America's disastrous healthcare system is responsible for incalculable, can't calculate it, amounts of illness, death, lost productivity, and federal deficit, not to mention anxiety, anger, and disgrace. That's the one we have right now, folks. And he says it's not going to get fixed because it's engaged in another failed system, the U.S. government. Rather than attempt to remedy the problem this summer, our government sat down and demonstrated its dizzying ineptitude. He wrote in this article, which we do not have the complete story here, that we might look back on this summer someday and think of it as the moment when our government lost us for good. It was that bad. Now, you can go online to rollingstone.com. You see people who have already read the article that have been commenting, and very interesting, the sort of blog at rollingstone.com about this. Writer Matt Taibbi is also been on several TV talk shows already talking about this. He believes that we have to have single-payer health care, and it doesn't look like we're going to get that. Public option really won't work, but it's better than nothing. I know some Democrats this week said in the House that it's public option or nothing, along with health care reform of other sorts. But that alone is going to cost us a fortune, but the only thing that will save money is single payer. Anything you wanted to add about the healthcare issue updates?
Well, there are a lot of lies and, you know, propaganda out there about this terrible healthcare reform battle that we're in the middle of. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people on talk shows and televisions, and people are listening, and they just believe every single word that some of these people say. And I mean, this is just propaganda. Please, please don't listen to what they are telling you. They don't know what the program is really about. Honestly, they don't. They're making big salaries for a reason. It's propaganda for probably the insurance industry. But one of the myths about single payer is that costs will skyrocket. This is incorrect. Single payer is the only health care reform that will save enough money to insure everyone. And if we eliminate the health insurance industry, we can save $400 billion a year in administrative costs and profits. That money can be used to insure those who lack insurance and fully cover those who are underinsured. And that would really go a long way in our economy.
And the source, Susan, that you're reading from is actually a publication or a sheet that's also available online at citizen.org. That's our friends at Public Citizen, the great nonprofit lobbyist group with a fantastic health division that has its own health news journal every month and is really on top of medicine and healthcare issues. I mean, really, 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 if you want to find out about the right way to do this or the right way to reform our healthcare system, you need to go to citizen.org. Just share one of the other myths that that they're breaking there.
There's one more. Single payer will cover less than the insurance I currently have. This is incorrect. For the majority of Americans, single payer would be a vast improvement. All medically necessary care would be funded through the single payer, including doctor visits, hospital care, prescriptions, mental health services, nursing home care, rehab, home care, eye care, and dental care. That covers it. So an enlightened single payer will also result in a sharp increase in public health funding. No more bills, no more deductibles, and no more copays. What a beautiful world that would be.
I think it's ironic that some people that thought that Obama might be cutting actually some benefits out of Medicaid and Medicare, which is for people 65 and over, they were all mad and angry. The same people protesting single payer and insurance for all below 65. So basically, folks, single payer is just would just increase the, you know, more people as the public option would with the same sort of plan. Yes, Medicare costs have gone up because doctor cost and medicine cost have gone up because of the way the current system is all messed up. And that's the problem. That's definitely the problem. I thought somebody was waving at us through a window here. And yeah, they're cleaning the windows on the other side of WHFR main studio so that people can see us next week.
It's a wonderful world when you can see through the windows.
Yes,
that's for sure.
Once a year before school starts, we get that window cleaned, and it's a good thing. Usually we have our back to the window, but we're turning around a little. Here's a entertaining article, if I may put this in here, New York Times. I use their op-ed articles, in other words, very intelligent people, other than the paper, that are able to get their opinion out. And one is their Nobel Prize winning economist, Paul Krugman. Well, doesn't work for the New York Times, but some university that he teaches at. But he talks here about the Swiss menace. Because Switzerland, along with a few other democracies, have voted and totally believe in and would not do away with single-payer universal healthcare systems. By the way, the countries that do have that, that are democracies, that vote for it, that keep voting for it, that want it, Canada, Britain, France, Italy, Germany, Sweden, Denmark, Israel, Australia, and New Zealand. Okay, and, of course, Switzerland. So listen to this. He says, Paul Krugman says, let's talk about healthcare around the advanced world. Every wealthy country other than the United States guarantees essential care to all of its citizens. There are, however, wide variations in the specifics with three main approaches. And this is good just to remember, there's three main approaches to single payer, which is not on the table now. But anyway, in Britain, the government itself runs the hospitals and employs all the doctors. And he says, we've all heard scare stories about how that works in practice. These stories, he says, are false. Like every system, the National Health Service in England has problems. But overall, it appears to provide quite good care while spending only about 40% as much per person as we do. 40% as much, 40% less. By the way, our own Veterans Health Administration, which is run somewhat like the British Health Service, also combines quality care with low cost. So our veterans, when they come back from fighting all the wars we get into, they have a system where the government runs the hospitals, like we had a VA hospital in Allen Park before they tore it down. They must ship the patients somewhere else. And they employ the doctors for these VA hospitals. And they do a good job, lower cost. Second route, he says, to universal coverage leaves the actual delivery of healthcare in private hands, but the government pays most of the bills. That's how Canada and, in a more complex fashion, France do it. So Canada and France, they let everything stay private, but the government pays the bills. And it's easier system to bill, it's easier system to regulate, and to avoid corruption. And they say it's a system familiar to most Americans, since even those of us not yet on Medicare have parents and relatives who are. May I be personal, Susan? Are you on Medicare yet?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, I'm not either, and I didn't want to imply that you were old enough. But I'm anxious to get there because, as a retiree of the great Henry Ford Community College here and now working here part-time, I'm on retired person's health care coverage for another 2 years until I turn 65, and the deductibles are so high, and I'm not that sick, that I'm paying every single penny of the deductible every year on doctor office calls. And I can't, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars, because once I get to a certain amount, then they'll pay over that. But I have to be pretty sick before I get to that. And I don't want to get sick. So I'm, you know, going to these office visits and paying for little prescriptions. And it's just, it's a mess. In fact, the billing is even a mess. I just got my Blue Cross Blue Shield statement on a visit that I made, it was 6 weeks ago, and I just found out I have to pay another $150. Now, a lot of people have it a lot worse, I know, with either no insurance or other kinds of coverage, but my Blue Cross Blue Shield is nowhere like it was when I was full-time.
Well, they just got a rate increase last week of 22%. That's a huge increase.
Yeah, and that you know, in the state of Michigan, as I said too, it's scary. They do not promise retired teachers or public sector employees in retirement to continue paying for health care at all, at all. So if the state goes belly up, as it may do in a couple of months, since $1.5 billion, or I heard the latest number was $1.6 billion, that the state has to come up with to balance the budget by October 1st, or technically be bankrupt, like California, and send out IOUs and probably cancel this medical insurance for retirees like myself who don't have Medicare and Medicaid. So it's a little bit scary. I know a lot of my colleagues are waiting to the last possible minute, as old as they can get before they retire, so that they can be part of Medicare and Medicaid and Medicare.
And when, okay, so very good.
Yeah, well, so, anyway, right. The third route, I got to finish, 1, 2, 3.
Switzerland.
Somebody will email me and say, where's the third thing? The third route to coverage relies on private insurance companies using a combination of regulation and subsidies to ensure that everyone is covered. Switzerland does offer the clearest example. Everyone is required to buy insurance. Insurers can't discriminate based on medical history or pre-existing conditions, and lower-income citizens get government help in paying for their policies. So that's all private, but that works, I think, because, and I did this here, Switzerland is one of the richest countries in the world. That's right. Their gross domestic product is, depending how you calculate GDP, is either $313 billion a year or $493 billion a year. That's $493 billion for a country that is only 16,000 square miles and has only 7 million people, 7.7 million. Michigan, by comparison, we've got 98,000 square miles, and we're not making $490 billion of GDP a year, and 10 million people. So Switzerland is just a little bit smaller, a couple million, 2.3 million people smaller than Michigan. But because of all of their business and industry, which I think is investment in banks and so on, and tourism, of course, which, you know, Michigan has some tourism, of course, too. But they have this fantastic, almost $500 billion in business that they do every year. So, and the average person there makes, anyway, it's a lot of money per year, big annual salaries. So the people that live there are rich. So that private system where they have to pay, in fact, I read on the blog, the Rolling Stone today, somebody from Switzerland saw the Rolling Stone blog and commented, and they said, yeah, it costs each of us because you have to pay every month, you know. And they say you can choose the level of coverage you want and, you know, take the risks that you want, but it's anywhere from $500 to $2,000 Swiss dollars a month, and I don't know how that stands to the U.S. dollar. But probably,
but their average salaries is probably $50,000 a year or something.
Right. So instead of their employer paying it, they pay it totally. But the government helps people that are extremely poor and can't pay it to have some coverage at least. So, you know, some people, Republicans, want that system, but it wouldn't work in this country. We have so many more people that are poor, and we don't have a country that's making the profits that Switzerland is. In other words, they got a lot of money coming into their government coffers every year just from the taxes on the business that goes on.
Right.
So
they have the great banking system where everybody goes to hide their money so they don't have to pay taxes in the United States.
Yeah. So Obamacare is, as he says here, is basically a plan to Swissify America using regulation and subsidies to ensure universal coverage. He says, if we were starting from scratch, we probably wouldn't have chosen this route. True socialized medicine would undoubtedly cost less. And he says, that's why I and others believe, this is Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman, that a true public option competing with private insurers is extremely important, at least that, if not universal, single payer. He talks finally about the greed of the medical industrial complex, the lies of the right-wing propaganda machine, and the gullibility of voters who believe those lies.
Yeah, I mean, it's very sad, you know, to know that you may know people, you may have friends and acquaintances who listen to some of this propaganda on the radio and television, and they actually believe every single word that they are hearing. You know, it's really sad, and talking rationally to some of these people is, you know, becomes very difficult. So, but I have something very interesting from the Press and Guide here about Dingell. John Dingell, the representative in the 15th district, he talked to constituents in Southgate recently about how federal stimulus money can help people personally. And wouldn't we all like to know the answer to those questions? There is $787 billion of American Recovery and Investment Act money. This is part of the stimulus program from President Obama, and it includes millions of dollars for Michigan. And this includes investments for energy, efficiency, education, transportation. So there are lots of dollars available for tax incentives, including the program for supplemental nutrition assistance program for COBRA. and dozens of other programs to ease the pain of these difficult economic times that we're in here in Michigan. And guess what? Dingell has compiled a guidebook on how to apply for stimulus money, as well as a guidebook for displaced workers. But they don't tell how to receive those guidebooks or where to access those guidebooks. So I think I would advise everyone, our WHFR listeners, to probably search out Representative John Dingell on the website and go to his website and see if he has information about these guidebooks on stimulus money, on applying for stimulus money, how you can get some. If he doesn't, I would be calling his office and asking him. Right, Jay?
Yes. What did you do with the Andy Dillon article from Tim Skupik? Did I leave that in my office?
Don't know.
Would you? The office is open, I think. Would you run back and
you really think you
grab
left
that
it?
Paper? Yes, I left it in the office. So.
Okay.
I will summarize it as long as you're scooting real quick. This is the new WHFR Journal. Can't you tell? The only local radio show that talks about Dearborn and the surrounding area. Sure, we're talking a lot about health care, but Here, take my key just in case the door happens to be locked. It's bound to be sitting there somewhere. Okay.
All right.
Because Tim Skupik in the Pressing Guide, I think from last Sunday, did have a comment about Andy Dillon's health care program that he proposed for public employees of the state of Michigan. And we've been talking about that for a couple of weeks. As you know, the other people who are in favor of at least a public option, if not single payer, is John Dingell himself, whose father introduced a single payer bill in 1948 in the Congress, which didn't go anywhere, of course. And John is John Dingell, Representative Dingell, the Honorable Representative John Dingell, is doing everything he can now as sort of the point person to get a great health care package established. Thank you. Okay, the papers have arrived. And fresh off the press. No, fresh out of the office. And this is Tim Skupik's article. New pups in Lansing are really just the same old dogs, is what he has to say. And he, of course, is he's covered Michigan politics since 1969. His column appears weekly in the Pressing Guide. And he's also got a show called Off the Record. I think it's Off the Record. And that's on Friday nights on FUM from Flint, and I wonder what's going to happen to FUM. I just found out that University of Michigan Flint, because they hardly have any students left, because there's hardly any people left living in Flint, that they put it up for sale.
Oh, really?
And so I don't know if another nonprofit will buy it. I don't know what they do. I mean, they could just give the license back, and then a commercial station could have the free. But anyway, FUM is great because they have more programs that I like to watch, like Off the Record. At times, I like to watch them anyway, than Channel 56 in Detroit. In any event, Skupik says about the new people coming into Lansing. He says, if there was a time for the freshman class in the Michigan House to assert its influence, if it has any, that time was yesterday. And so the story is from last Sunday the 16th, so he means last week sometime. Recall, he says, that the group of 44 newbies, 26 Democrats and 18 Republicans, arrived in town all souped up to change the world. They signed a bipartisan pledge to cooperate with each other, even when they disagreed. But to date, during these dog days of summer, the freshman caucus looks like a puppy with its tail between its legs. There's a Pet Lovers reference for you. Susan Morrell is also the host of our Pet Lovers Lane show, the second Saturday of most months. Okay. He says it's not that there's a lack of issues to tackle. Imagine the impact of the gang of 44 if that gang of 44 signed a pledge to give back part of their paycheck en masse. It could goad the old timers to do the same or face the wrath of God back home. Imagine the impact if the 44 took a stance against the behavior of the governor, the Senate GOP leader, and the Democratic Speaker of the House. Madam Governor, that's Jennifer Granholm, of course, Skupik says, show us your plan to balance the budget. The plan you made public 7 months ago has changed dramatically. That's what leadership is. Senator Bishop, he says, it's time to stop negotiating out both sides of your mouth. For public consumption, he's the Republican majority leader, for Republican minority leader, for public consumption, you demand that the budget be balanced with cuts and no new taxes, yet quietly behind the scenes, you've given the green light to your minions to negotiate a possible revenue-raising deal with the governor. So which is it? for once stand up and be counted. Speaker Dillon, and here's the local angle because Andy Dillon, representative from Dearborn Heights, the gang of 44, he suggests, say this to Speaker Dillon. Shame on you for proposing a dramatic plan to reinvent the public employee health public health system, but failing to include anybody else, including us, including those 44 in the legislature, in the formulation. Yeah, which I guess public employees are not our senators and legislators, so they could be mad at that. And while we're at it, the freshman class thinks it's unconscionable that your party, and that is the Democratic Party, has shut out Republicans from debating issues on the House floor. Can you say fairness? Is the rhetorical question. Okay, maybe calling, and Skupik is back using his own voice. Okay, maybe calling out the governor and top legislative leaders is too risky, even for a group that indicated it was willing to take risks for the betterment of the system. But surely the 44 could agree that the summer work, in quotes, work, schedule has been a joke, irresponsible, and an embarrassment. The House has met one time since the 1st of July. That's a six-week summer snooze. I know Mayor O'Reilly, when I talked to him at homecoming off the air, also told me that, you know, part-time legislature, he was asked by a woman who came up to our booth while he was there and said, what about a part-time legislature? And, of course, that would require a rewriting of the Constitution in Michigan, a constitutional convention, which is scheduled to be a possibility in a year or two, and he was all in favor of that. And I think, indirectly, he was also trying to tell her that he'd like to see that discussed and worked out, too, because, in fact, they're only working part-time, so why not just pay them for part-time? I mean,
exactly.
Maybe things would happen faster if they knew that their money would be cut off at the end of next week. Maybe they'd actually pass a bill, you know, rather than knowing, well, I got four more months of paychecks coming in before I really have to do something until October 1st. So that's an issue. He says if these new lawmakers have any desire to shake things up, new people usually don't because they don't know what's going on. It's time, he says, to forcibly speak out, but they appear to lack the nerve. In fact, one of the freshman leaders said that they're looking for a softer issue to tackle first, not the budget. Softer, in quotes. Ironically, these 44 freshmen were elected in large part because they were not part of the system. When they went campaigning door to door, citizens wanted to know, are you the incumbent? But more and more, minus any effort to assert their strength, the freshmen look like incumbents falling into the age-old Lansing malaise of going along to get along. Shame on them, too, he says. As the comic strip character Pogo lamented, his final comment is, we have looked at the enemy, and he is us.
Well, Jay, what about this health care proposal by Andy Dillon?
Well, you know, as Mayor O'Reilly said to me, and it's my opinion too, even before I talked to him, but I'm glad to know that somebody else has the same opinion I do on this, a state program, even if it's only just for a small segment, but a state-sponsored program of health care, even though it seems like a larger group you can, you know, negotiate for lower-cost health care, the larger group you have. I mean, that's kind of true if you're trying to find lower cost health care. If you're a larger group and you're all negotiating at once to pick the provider, then you should have more power to pick better coverage and lower cost. And so that's sort of Dillon's proposal of putting everybody in this group, except it would drop teachers and police across the state down in benefits. It doesn't look like they're going to, because they have superior benefits to the people that work in the offices in Lansing bureaucracy, for example. So, and it's not for everybody. And it's going to finally cost the state a bundle because there's no way to reform health care in it. It just says, well, we should all negotiate as a larger group. So it's an interesting idea that does work at times. But as Mayor O'Reilly said, too, you know, look at the Massachusetts system of trying to get health care for everybody in the state. Kind of a Swiss version of healthcare again for Massachusetts. They're going broke. They're about $1.5 billion behind in their health care program, Massachusetts. That the only answer is single payer to bring down these costs, and that's the bottom line.
No, but Andy Dillon's program doesn't cover people who are underinsured or not insured.
Nobody.
And then
public employees.
Skubick is saying that Dillon didn't give the opportunity to debate the issue on the floor of the, you know, for the state politicians, the Republicans?
It looks like the budget issue, because it's not clear here. It says, shaming you for proposing a plan Oh, and then shut them out. So, yeah, that somehow, and I never heard of this before, but somehow Republicans can't debate, it says, issues on the House floor. And I don't understand how that's possible in a democracy, in a parliamentary system, whether they just can't debate his plan or the budget plans. I mean, they got to debate. Debate is part of what the two houses of our Congress are all about. Sometimes goes on forever, but still. So I don't understand the reference. I can't explain it, folks. But apparently he did, at least for a small period of time, he shut down debate.
So basically,
Scoopic knows. So
yeah, I mean, Dylan's just got this plan. He's got it out there, and he kind of publicized it. And there's no discussion. There's no debate. It's just his plan. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep. Well, we've got about 12 minutes left. I'd like to feature, if Susan will allow me, two stories from Jack Lessenberry, and one is his usual harangue from the Metro Times. And you know, the only way to pay for things that cost more, whether it's healthcare or whatever, is to raise taxes. You know, really, I mean, we're so badly in debt now, we don't have any other income in other places. So some people may have to raise taxes. I thought I heard that the Obama plan was going to raise taxes on people above $250,000, or at least close some loopholes, which would pay for a whole bunch. Now, we always believe in progressive taxation, at least that's the federal income tax idea, is the people that have more money are supposed to pay more. Of course, thanks to loopholes, they don't. Some do, but most of them don't. They pay a lot less than what they should. It's also true of many businesses, including the Ford Motor Company. They don't pay their share. They've gotten tax rebates and benefits, maybe to keep in business, maybe not, but a lot of big corporations have ways to pay almost no taxes, too. Okay, so Lessenberry takes on the tax haters, and he says, and this is because of the state of Michigan going broke on October 1st, probably bankrupt if they can't figure out how to raise some money. He says, everybody hates government, right? We bitch, moan, and complain about it constantly. Nationally, the right wing is cleverly whipping up the yahoos, telling them to noisily protest against a health care plan that would drastically help this nation and greatly improve most of their lives. That's the irony. Here in Michigan, he says, things have been bad for years, and naturally state government is easy to blame. Quote, Jennifer Granholm better not even think about raising my taxes, unquote, the lady at my butcher shop spat out as she gave me 2 pounds of hamburger the other day. Quote, they are all good for nothing, unquote, she said savagely. The legislators, their staff, the money that they spend on fancy offices, we would be better off getting rid of all of them. We can just take care of ourselves, unquote, says this woman at the butcher shop to Jack Lessenberry. And he says, do you really mean that, I asked. I certainly do, she said. Well, guess what, Lessenberry goes on. Odds are that she may get her wish. She and all the rest of us are likely to get to see how wonderful life is with little or no state government 6 weeks from now. Actually, the butcher shop lady wasn't completely wrong. Our state government has let us down, but not by taxing us too much. The reason she might want to consider tarring and feathering Governor Jenny and company is that our so-called leaders have consistently put off making the hard decisions. They have avoided telling us the real truth about the state of our state and what we need to do to save ourselves. And as a result, we're heading for the edge of a cliff. Here's what's really happening. The Michigan Constitution, capital C, requires the state to have a balanced budget every year. Consequently, by September 30th, one day before the start of the state's new fiscal year, the legislature has to pass a budget that is, in theory, balanced. That's in quotes. But it is also because our leaders haven't taxed us enough. What, you say? Am I insane? Nope, Lessenberry goes on. Not on this issue, anyway. We haven't been taxed enough. I've said this for years. Okay? And people don't understand.
You said it or has he said it?
I have said it. I have said it, and he is saying it.
Okay.
And he goes on to explain, for the things we say we want, we haven't been taxed enough, he says. Is it important to have a prison system? Is it important to have good schools and colleges and universities? If that's true, we need to put more money out. We are about at the bottom of all 50 states in the United States for supporting our public universities, our schools of higher education, including our community colleges, too. We are at the bottom, 48th, 49th, of state support for public universities. Why is our tuition so high? Okay, because the state of Michigan doesn't have the money, or doesn't have the wherewithal, or the commitment to actually support higher education. And that is a crime, and that is a shame. Anybody that's qualified, I feel, I'm an educator, should have the right to be educated, yeah, by government support, all the way to a doctorate or whatever it takes, okay? That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. In fact, someone told me the other day, said, oh, you should go to California because they have free tuition for all the colleges and universities, public. No, I said, that was in the 60s before Ronald Reagan came in. When Reagan came in as governor of California, they ended it. But what a wonderful idea. Who says it can't work? Okay, California has so many debts now. You know,
I don't think that's true, Jay. I would dispute that. I'm going to look that up and I'm going to research that.
They did have totally free. If you were a resident, you couldn't just go there and.
I'm going to research it because I think you're wrong about that. But okay, go
you
ahead.
You mean you think that
about
they still
when
have it?
About when it was ended? No, it was, when it was ended?
Yeah, it was ended at the end of the '60s. So now, okay, let me go on here with Lessenberry's statement since we're already in trouble on this. He says, "Sure, tough choices." He says, "Really." Quote unquote, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, as the libertarians used to say. Now the clock is running down, and the state has hard choices to make. 6 months ago, the lawmakers thought that the bottoms of their bodies were mainly, I don't know if I can say that other word on radio, were mainly covered, thanks to the Obama buck stimulus from the federal government. But guess what? The deficit got a lot larger, and much of the stimulus had to be used to cover the current year's deficit. Next year, there's less than $1 billion left. That means they have to find $2 billion more. How will they get it? There aren't many options. Cut spending to the bone, raise taxes, or most likely do both. But for anything to happen, the state Senate and House have to agree. Democrats overwhelmingly control the House. Republicans have a hammerlock on the Senate, and they do not see eye to eye. For weeks now, the leadership has been meeting behind closed doors. For a long time, nobody said very much about what was happening. But late last week, and this is current story from this week's current Metro Times, folks, editorial comment from Jack Lessenberry. Late last week, Senate Minority Leader Mike Prusy, a Democrat from the Upper Peninsula, finally said, what's been happening? Not much. He says, we haven't really gotten anywhere near solid discussions on any of that stuff. Says Lessenberry, soon. To break it down, there's about, currently it's a $1.8 billion shortfall in the general fund. I said 1.6 earlier, which finances, among other things, the prison system, Medicaid, and the aid to higher education. Now, that's a huge deficit bill, given that the general fund was supposed to have about $7 billion in it. The rest of the deficit is in the $10.9 billion school aid fund, the main source of support for elementary and high school education. So, if the legislature and the governor do not sign off on a deal by September 30th, the state will start shutting down. That could mean no renewing your driver's license, no fishing or hunting licenses. Well, that'll hurt right there. No fishing or hunting licenses.
All right.
Might mean no classes at state universities, laid off teachers, no state troopers on the roads. Fixing the roads, forget it. By the way, if you're a non-essential state worker, meaning mainly non-elected, forget about getting paid. You haven't heard much about this financial iceberg approaching, have you, in the major media? That's because your elected legislatures don't want to make you upset. Upset with them, that is. Anyway, the media would rather tell you about the dream cruise and the trivial lives of celebrities. By the way, the state normally figures out its budget in July. Every day of delay hurts local governments, especially school districts. Next week, Jack says, I plan to suggest how we might fix this. So we will come back to him next week. Because right now it looks like there's only going to be higher taxes. And, oh well. Telephone war is revisited. We did report here, and it was my editorial comment too, so this is a follow-up that I've got to do in the last 3.5 minutes. So sorry, Susan Morrell, you're sitting there looking at me. But he says, unfortunately, about his AT&T thing, he says, I left a wrong impression. I concluded by saying that Comcast had promised to fix the problem and give his wife back her old number. I was sadly a naive fool. A succession of Comcast representatives lied, never delivered what they promised, and never showed up for scheduled appointments. Eventually, he says, I figured out what to do. The trick to modern life is remembering that this country is fast turning into the old Soviet Union, a network of vast and incompetent bureaucracies, some private and some public, which become harder and harder for the average person to negotiate. What's needed is patience and time, not logic. So I washed 7 loads of laundry, heaped them on the bed, grabbed a phone, and waded into the hellish jungle of customer service lines. Fortunately, after many, many conversations while I folded, folded his clothes, all of which required me to repeat the same information. I lucked onto a real human being who fixed the problem. There are a few real human beings around.
I've had this experience.
Okay.
Yes,
by
I
giving
have.
Me a new line and connecting it through the old jack, something various AT&T zombies swore they could not do. The next month, with a newfound faith in AT&T, I had their version of the internet and cable installed in another building where I have an office. Naturally, the technicians screwed it up. I'm writing these words in that office Sunday morning, waiting for an AT&T technician to come and try to fix what they should have done the first time. I'm now linked to the outside world only by a circa 1993 dial-up connection. He says, but I've used that time wisely. This is the humorous part of here, I think. Got to be some joke here somewhere. He says, I got 3 months of unauthorized charges taking off a credit card because of all of his phone calls, and sent a telepathic message to the last rulers of the USSR. Congratulations, your way of life, this is the communists, okay, telepathic message to the last rulers of the USSR. Congratulations, your way of life is in fact triumphing all across the United States. If you had just hung on for two more decades, you could have walked in and taken us over, and nobody would have noticed. Except in Michigan, that is. After all, you commies did give people jobs. Poorly paid, maybe, but jobs.
Jay's got a little cough there. But anyway, yeah, you know, I've had this experience with Comcast. I have Comcast, and I just hate to call them on the phone for anything, and you always need to call them for something. And, you know, it's just like Jack Lessenberry said. It's endless talking to a machine, waiting for a real person to come on the phone, and then you talk to numerous people, and sometimes it never gets resolved. I mean, I have a problem with my phone that I've had since day one with Comcast, and I've never been able to get it fixed. Hello. You know, so it becomes futile. It's just every time you have to call them, it's like double dread,
dread. There's no single evil here, I think, because some people were even asking me after the show, and I, along with Jack, said, don't ever, you know, use AT&T. Every company has some problems with customer service, and the only thing to do is to wait it out and keep asking for, keep calling back. Maybe you find a different person, call back the same, and then ask for a supervisor, too. That sometimes helps. There's only so many phone companies in this area. There's basically four. I understand Altel was bought out by Sprint. So it's only Sprint, T-Mobile, AT&T, and Verizon. And for a while, I lived in a black hole that was really only serviced by Verizon in East Dearborn. At this point, everybody covers my particular location in East Dearborn. They had even T-Mobile finally, within the last year only, finally got a tower in my area on the east side of Dearborn.
So what do you have? Whose phone service do you have now?
I would rather not say because I don't want to endorse them. I don't think you – well, I don't want to give an advertisement for them. But I don't have AT&T. Let me put it that way.
Very good.
Because I don't believe you should support a company that over a period of months does such a bad job at customer support.
And if I had another alternative other than Comcast, believe me, I would go for it. I mean, I'm very, very unhappy with them and have been for many moons.
You don't have WOW?
No,
available?
I would really like to have WOW.
Okay. WOW has been, and it's not an ad, I'm just mentioning WOW in Dearborn, they have been rated across the whole nation, not necessarily in Dearborn, as the best customer service cable company.
Yeah.
Of course, customer service, wouldn't it be good if they just get it right the first time? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
but I mean, you know, they're dealing with technical issues. I realize it's, you know, difficult, and there's lots of technical stuff, but hey.
We're waiting for the arrival of Joanne Korchinska. Highway 61 is going to get started right away, so we have to say goodbye to our faithful listeners here. I think the podcast is probably stopping to record anyway at this point. So thank you for listening. Thank you, Susan Morrell.